Hola mi gente, my name is Jessica Yáñez and I want you to join me for some Wine and Chisme. The Wine and Chisme podcast was created to amplify voices across communities of color, all while drinking a glass of wine. From wine talk, interviews, and recaps of all things pop culture, join me every Wednesday for the Chisme. Please make sure to check out the Wine and Chisme podcast and other amazing podcasts as part of the Latina Podcasters Network.
Hola, hola, mi gente. It's your girl, Odalis Jasmine, and y'all are listening to Hello Latino. Today, I'm talking to Juliana Lodoño, a bilingual Latina licensed mental health therapist based in New Jersey. Her business is focused on the intersectionality of mental health and Latino BIPOC communities, something that I think we all know we need more and more access to. Her mission is to bring awareness, education, and resources through various outlets. From We All Grow Latina to LinkedIn News to Univision, Juliana is spreading the news, the access, and is helping us all tap into these mental health resources. Let's jump in and learn a little bit behind La Mujer herself and the various resources that she offers. De una, let's jump in. Juliana, finally, this is happening. I feel like it's been forever in the making, and I know that next time I come to New York, we're going to have to do a powwow or something.
Hell yes. I got to get you to Jersey. I got to get you across the river. You got to come to Jersey.
Pero sabes que I fly into Newark, so I go to Jersey. I just don't stay there.
You're doing it wrong, babe. We got to get you to stay here a little bit.
I'm down. You just tell me, you know, don't tell me the good time. I will be there. But I'm excited that we're finally having this space together. There's so many questions I have, but you know, I start with the first one, and that's how do you identify and why?
I love it. I love it. I identify as a very, very proud Latina born in Medellin, Colombia. Beautiful, beautiful city of flowers, of a land of eternal spring, of hardworking and the most humble humans. I am also a very proud daughter to a kick-ass single mom. My mom is my best friend, my whole world. Proud first-gen college graduate times two. So double the debt, of course. But very proud to say I have my bachelor's degree, my master's. I also identify as a bilingual and licensed mental health therapist here in New Jersey. And for many different reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into, now entrepreneur and business owner. So yeah, we're getting fancy with these titles now.
And Medellin is where the Los Paisas, right? That's what they're known for?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. See, Carol G and Maluma teach us a little bit of history.
Of course. Of course they do. They're killing it. J Balvin, too. He's been in the game forever. Oh. Yeah. They're all literally born, raised in Medellin.
I have to give you some love real quick for Colombia because I grew up with Colombian novelas. People don't know. Colombian novelas are so fire. They're my favorite. Still to this day, I watch Colombian novelas on Netflix. I mean, La Reina del Flow is one of my favorites. I'm like, let me get some like recent ones. But La Reina, no, ¿cómo se llama? La Hija del Mariachi was the one I grew up with. And that has forever been my favorite Colombian novela. And that's why I follow that actress everywhere. So when she did Reina del Flow, I was like, period. Yeah. I'm going to watch it.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. For me, it was Muñecas de la Mafia. And when I saw that, I was like, okay. I was like, yes, boss women. And it's funny because it's so much of now with Griselda being on Netflix. Mm. I see such a huge connection to that. And Las Muñecas de la Mafia came out, oh, my gosh, I think 20 years ago at this point. I don't even know. But I'm like, y'all, we got to put both of them like together for people to see like there is growth, there is power in Colombian women. And yeah, we make amazing telenovelas. We really do.
Seriously. And, you know, I feel like, not that the accents are the same, but the accent, the Colombian and Honduran accent have similarities. And so that's why I think I, like, felt a little bit seen when I would watch Colombian novelas. And I'm like, oh, we say the same thing. We say vos. Like, even just, like, the way we express ourselves feel similar. But I just, that's just some Colombian love on my side because, you know, we love Colombia and we love the novelas and the work. But I want to dive into your story because, again, there's so many questions that I have, but I want to start from the very beginning. So tell me about, you mentioned your mom. Tell me about growing up and being both Colombian, being first gen. Tell me about your childhood.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So a big thing about my childhood, right? Like, I was born in Medellin. So Spanish was my first language. Like, statistically, right, when we think of people that have English as, or any language as their second language, they're going to really, really struggle with so many things, right? Because your brain is technically doing overtime all the time. You're going back and forth nonstop. And I remember just being so young and thinking, like, what is going on? Like, why are people talking this really weird and strange language? And why can't nobody, like, why doesn't anybody understand me? Like, it's not what's wrong with me. It's what's wrong with you. Like, you should know Spanish. Right.
And how old were you, by the way, when you were here?
I came at the age of 3. Tenía 3 años.
Oh, jovencita.
Tiny. And the one thing that I'm so grateful that my mom instilled in me was that en esta casa se habla español. And I could speak English all day, every day, outside of my house. But when I came home, I better have my Spanish together. Sí, señora, no señora, the whole nine for my mother. And in the moment, I remember just being, like, so upset. Like, well, nobody else does that. Why do I have to continue to speak and listen and all of this in Spanish? And now, as an adult, I'm like, oh, my God. If my mom didn't do that at that age, I wouldn't have half of the opportunities that I have now. So it was something that really, in the moment, was a pain in the ass. But it has transformed my life. For sure.
And it's funny, you, as you're mentioning this, like, you're speaking Spanish and people are looking at you like, ¿qué le pasa? What's funny to me is this experience of, like, I'm speaking words. It makes sense to me. Why aren't you understanding me? Like, it's just, it's a funny experience. And I want to give this quick anecdote, which I know you know about, or maybe you don't, but, you know, Yucatan, how it got its name, the Yucatan Peninsula. It's a beautiful story of, like, los que estaban ahí, los indígenas, they were there. And in Mayan language, Yucatán means, like, I can't understand you, or I don't know what you're saying. And so when these Spanish people came through and they were speaking Spanish to them and they were like, Yucatán, and they were like, oh, that's the name of this place, Yucatán. And it's just a funny, again, language barriers and just this difference in experience, just so interesting. And being first gen, you almost get the opportunity to understand both sides and understand, like, this, like, cognitive dissonance of, like, this is different than what I'm used to. And tell me about that time, though, of you starting to rebel. We all have a moment, right, where we're like, why am I saying mande? Or why am I saying this? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many questions that come to you. Tell me about that time you started to rebel. When was the moment you were brought back to, like, las pies en la tierra? Like, when did you start to realize, like, no, there's power in being Colombian and being bilingual?
Honestly, I would say when I was able to go back to Colombia, and I came to the U.S. at the age of 3, and I didn't have the opportunity to go back to Colombia till I was 17.
Wow.
Yeah. So
14 years, a whole 14 years of life.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. So I never knew any different than the U.S., right? I never knew any different than Colombians, Latinos in America. So when I had the opportunity to go back home, one, be reconnected with family, but two, actually be there and stand in the ground and look at the nature and be surrounded by animals and the most hardworking, humble, just most incredible humans I have ever met. It was like, wow, like I have such power in being born in this community. And while yes, right, like for pursuing the American dream, my mom and I came to the US, but these are my roots and they're still there. And every time that I've gone back since, it's always the most refreshing thing that I could ever do for my spirit to say like, no, like I'm going back home. Yeah. And while the US has been home to me for all of these years, it's something spiritual that continues to connect me back to Medellin and Colombia as a whole. And really it was that rebellious stage, I think, also during high school. And then again, once you're like stepping foot and walking into the airport and right, if you ever go to Medellin, like you're all the mountains and just everything, you're going to see the farms and the villages and the food. Oh my God, the food, everything. And you're taking it all in and you're like, wow, like people vacation where I was born. Like, whoa. And now,
doesn't it make
right,
you appreciate it so much more? You're yes! just like this.
Oh my gosh.
This is me. Yes! It's all me.
Yes. Yes. And now even most recently, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, Medellin actually won like top city to live in, beating New York, beating like all these other places. Yeah. Oh no, like insane. Right. So like now we're getting all these big companies, tech, right, coming to Colombia, coming to Medellin. And it's one of those things that it's like, wow, like so much of Colombia has grown and shifted, right? And we're no longer that dark, scary place from 30 years ago, 40 years ago. We are thriving. And people are finally catching on to that. Right? Like there's different versions of a person. There's different versions of a country. There's different versions of government, of anything. And, right, change can be such a good thing. And it was for my country. And I love that. I love to go back and see that it's thriving and doing good and growing and flourishing.
I love that you compared these countries to like humans, the evolution of it. Like it changes. Yeah. One of my favorite stories is El Salvador. I'm like seeing what it's turning into. It's so beautiful. And it gives me so much hope for Central America, which we're finally getting some acknowledgement and love. And I want to ask you, because you've been going back, didn't you just come from Colombia? I think you were just there.
I was just there 2 weeks ago.
How has it changed you? Because you talk about like it's really like good for your spirit to go back and forth. How has it changed your mental health, if at all, in terms of just going back home and coming here?
Oh my gosh. So this past time I was there for 1 week, or literally like 8-9 days. And even though it was a short amount of time, one, it's just the ability to be in nature, which, right, obviously for me as a clinician, as a therapist, I have all the understanding and the research to back up. People that see a body of water are happier. Right. People that are able to see green and greenery are also happier. Right. Like I'm in the East Coast. It's February. There's not a leaf outside. There's nothing green. Trees are bare bones. It's depressing as hell. And so to go back to Colombia, right, like the land of eternal spring, hint, hint, there's never a winter. It's beautiful. Oh my gosh. I mean, tanning. I was literally out tanning in the pool, feeling the sun on my face, right? Like, again, right now, like I come back, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's 5 o'clock. I'm like, oh, it's 5:30 and the sun isn't setting yet. This is amazing. When, right? Like such little things that I think I wouldn't know to appreciate had I not been born in Medellin.
Oh, wow.
Right? That we can see green every day, all day. Right? That, you know, you can step outside and depending on where you live, right? But like you can step outside and there's going to be, right, trees and there's going to be nature and there's a community, right? You're going to know your neighbors. Odds are they're going to be some of the closest people to you. I can honestly say I have no idea who lives next door to me. None. Right? Oh, but it's just such a different environment. Of course, it's going to foster better mental health and even like just greater capacity to just go on with life. It's like you have like this optimism of like, I can see green and the sky is blue and there's flowers. Like today's gonna be a great day just because life looks so pretty. Outdoors look so pretty. I'm gonna have a good day.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because I remember the first time I traveled, I realized, oh, US isn't where everyone wants to go. Like it's not always the place where people, you know, but you think that being here, like, no, everybody comes here. And then you start to travel around and you realize there's so many different walks of life and people choose to live a life that's different. That's not this, like, I don't know how to explain the US, but sometimes my family explains it best. They're like, aquí se tiene que trabajar. Like there's no downtime. And being back in those countries, like Latin American countries, you realize how much pride, I mean, aunque son pobres or whatever it is, they're so happy. They're so happy with the little that they have because they know the power of community. They know the power of being able to go outside and see the mountains and the water, or to be able to sit in a hammock and not do anything, or to be able to go buy some natural coco de la palma. Like there's so much beauty in just existing. Which I think sometimes we feel here we have to earn our existence, right? We have to earn just all the things that we have versus just being for the sake of being.
Oof. Absolutely.
And talk about 30 years ago, because Medellin wasn't the destination 30 years ago.
No.
And is that why, tell me, is that why your mom left? Like, why did she decide to come to the US? What was her American dream?
Her American dream was, so yeah, right, like this was now late 90s, but a lot of people think, right, like, oh, after Pablo Escobar, like, oh yeah, like things just went back to normal, right? Like you have to understand that, like, this man controlled the city in so many ways. So now we're like, okay, from what I've been told and what I've seen, because I've had, again, I go back so often, right? Like, it became like, okay, like, now what, right? Like, a lot of the people in the community and in the city had to learn, okay, so what can we do or can't we do, right? Like, what is that undefined, like, red line in the sand of what we do next and what we're allowed to do or say or not? And, again, the economy, there was so much uncertainty in Colombia 30, 40 years ago, that you couldn't really think about the future in positive light.
Yeah.
And that was sad, right? To think of so many people during that time when you were going through a war, really, to think of, right, optimism, right? To think about rebuilding, right? And we knew that it was going to take time. And yeah, my mom's vision was, all right, I have this child. I want to give her the best. And she did it. She did it by herself. My mom is one of five siblings. And she is the only one that, not even just one in five. She's the youngest of the five. And she was the one that
took
that
risk. Shout out to the youngest
sibling. And she did that. She said, I'm going to go. I'm going to make my way. I'm going to find my way and make it. In the U.S., she did it without a penny in her pocket, without knowing a word of English, and she figured it all out on her own.
Wow.
And yeah, it's unbelievable to think, like, that is not just the story of my mother, but it's the story of so many of us, that it's like, how do you start to conceptualize what that must have felt like to go to this place 30 or 40 years ago, right? You couldn't Google where you were going.
That part, yes.
That part, right? Like, you couldn't Google it. Oh, you wanted to get from here to there? Like, okay, pull out a map, right? You mm-hmm. you wanted to learn how to say something, or you needed to express yourself in this language? Pull out your pocket dictionary, right? Yep. There's no phones. There's no, you know, computers are just starting, and they're those blocky big things that weigh 3,000 pounds. So it's so incredible to think that my mom did that in a stage in society where we don't have the access at our fingertips that we do now.
Mm. It's so
that grit wild. Is really what I so what wild. I carry. Yeah.
And don't you find so much power in that?
So much. Yeah. So much. And I think that that's where my resiliency comes from. That, right, like my mom was going to make a way and find a way, mm-hmm. which allows me to make my way and find my own way at like the next stage in the game. And the great thing about it now is that as a business owner, so much of the time, like next week, like my mom and I have a conference. I'm bringing my mom.
No, so both of y'all have a conference. Talk about it.
But now both of us have a conference. We both, right? So I bring her to absolutely any opportunity that I have. It's like, no, like we have this opportunity. My mom has been to Vegas with me. She has been everything work related, conference related. I'm like, and this is my plus one.
Yes.
Because it's our glory, it's our celebration, and I wouldn't be where I am without her.
Is that how you – I know for the first-gen experience, it's a lot of, like, guilt sometimes attached to it or associated with it. It's, like, a little bit of survivor's guilt, but it's also, like, pressure. Like, I want to do good, but the more I do good, the more guilt I have sometimes. Is that how you kind of combat it, is taking your mom on some of these trips or taking her on some of these, like, moments with you to celebrate, to kind of bask in that you did it, we did it? Have a moment?
That's a great question, right? Because that survivor's guilt, that can eat you alive in so many ways and deteriorate you and stop you from doing whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. I think for me, I think I made along the way, I made peace with the fact that my mom made the sacrifices so that I could thrive. And in a way, it's more of if I'm going to thrive and if I'm going to be living my best life, that really means she will, right? So for me, and my priority has been since graduating has really been like, I don't want to like be like that young homeowner. Like I want to retire my mom like yesterday. Like I want to make sure she's taken care of. She's doing good. And then I can say, all right, now I can start with, you know, do I want to buy a house? Do I not want to buy a house? Do I want to buy, right, the Range Rover? That's my dream car. Like, then I will figure that out. Then I'll figure that out for me. But in so many ways, it's like, you got me to this level. How do I not come back and say, here, mom, you know, put your feet up and relax, right? So in so many ways, it's that ability to say, let me transform this guilt into something that you and I can both honor and celebrate.
Yeah.
Because again, right, I wouldn't be here without her in so many ways. So let's take all of it in together. And I'm thankful that we both have the time, the energy, and the ability to do so. Right? I don't want to wait until I'm 40 or 50 or 60. Right. I don't want to pull my mom in a wheelchair like, OK, now's the time to celebrate. Right. Like, no, we're going to do this now. Estamos viviendo. Vamos a salir a bailar. Vamos a ir a comer rico. We're going to do all of it now because time is not guaranteed. So we're going to celebrate everything now and live in the moment.
I love that you are like, you have no idea that you're giving so many people who are listening right now permission to feel that, because I think there's so much pressure in society to focus on yourself, this very individualistic mindset, right? Like, you don't have to worry about your parents, like, worry about you. I can't tell you how many times people have told me that. And I'm like, yeah, you don't get it. But you're giving so many people who are listening right now permission to be okay with that lifestyle, that choice mm-hmm. of, yes, you want to give back to your parents. That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing to give back and to bring them with you, take them on that work trip, spoil them a little bit. And it's okay to find joy in that as well. Like, I just want to highlight that power of you giving so many people right now affirmation and just love on, like, it's okay. It's okay to do that and spoil yourself too. There's both.
Yes. Yes. You can do both. Absolutely. And you can feel good about it for sure.
Yes. Cause I can't tell you how good it feels to know that I can do some small part in making them smile when they've suffered so much. And I've seen that suffering so much. And there was moments like me going to college and doing life on my own and being able to travel where I was feeling guilty for even smiling and having a good time. Cause I know back home, my parents are going through X, Y, Z. Now one piece of advice I received when I was younger, because I was able to travel when I was in college and I had those opportunities early on. Now I couldn't bring people with me, but I was able to do it on the dollar, like very, very broke college student, post-college student type of vibe. But I remember thinking, I'm working so hard because one day I am going to bring my mom, my dad, I'm going to bring the whole hood with me. And I used to always say that to myself, like, I'm going to do it. And then the first time I was able to send my parents to their own vacation without me, I was like, have fun. That was probably the one moment I felt like, if I had that I made it moment, this is it. Like, I don't want to feel anything else. This right here, just giving them a chance to rest. Yeah, that's what I want more of. But again, there's so much work that had to be done for me to get there, right? It wasn't just like I made my first dollar and I'm like, okay, I'm spending it on them. Like, go. Like, it was a process. It was a journey. And now, and it's a blessing to be able to do that. And it's again, okay for you to work toward that. That was definitely my mindset. I'm like, I can't wait to get there. Ooh, girl. Yeah. Ooh, girl. That first gen narrative.
It hits deep.
It does hit deep. And I want to ask you about the work that you do, because I find your work really interesting in terms of you're really focused on this intersectionality between Latinos and mental health, which wasn't always used in the same sentence before, right? And to this day, I'm going to be real with you. I don't tell my parents I go to therapy. It's a weird conversation. I can't wait to tell them one day and see how they feel. They probably won't even react like I think they'll react. But it's something that isn't very common in the Latino community, but I think it's being normalized slowly. What's your story with therapy? Like, when did this journey begin for you to just be interested in the intersectionality of mental health and the community?
Absolutely. So I went to go get my master's degree. You need a master's level to then become licensed to be a mental health therapist. And as I'm going through the program, also during COVID, I realized, like, hold on a second, like, I'm the only Latina. I'm the only person of color in my classrooms. Mm. Red flag number one out of the many red flags.
Right.
But it became one of those things that I slowly started to realize, like, holy shit, if this is how my classes are, how is it going to be when I graduate and I'm practicing as a clinician? Mm. And of course, it was truly the case, right? There's so few of us compared to the larger picture. Therapists, for the most part, are cisgendered women of affluent communities, right? That are wealthy. And I was just sitting there like, okay, not white, definitely, right? Most definitely not wealthy. And I kept thinking, like, what about the access? What about like all of these other factors that continue to be barriers on so many systemic levels? So once I realized like, okay, I have all this privilege, I had all this opportunity, and I'm still confined even after all this, like, you got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. And it didn't sit right with me that I had all this information, I had all this knowledge, and I couldn't help someone in California because of the fact that I'm in New Jersey, you're in California, and insurance won't cover it, and I'm not licensed in California, so I can't help you. Ugh. I did not like that. And I found a loophole. I said, I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to do whatever I can to get the message of mental health to as many Latinos that I can. And nobody's going to stop me.
Period.
So launching myself as a public speaker, a workshop facilitator, a thought leader, getting on podcasts, doing writing, that's really the main focus. And all of my talks, all of my engagements, verbally written, are both in English and in Spanish. And that is what I pride myself on. Like, you want me to come to your company and speak on mental health? I'm going to come. My slides are going to be both in English and Spanish. And I'm going to have English, Spanish, and Spanglish.
Period. Oh my, what was that? What was like that first moment where you came and you're like, okay, I'm going to do it in Spanish. Like, what, I just can't imagine the power you must have felt to be able to speak the two languages.
It's been pretty wild. And every time that I do it, it's always so breathtaking because one, my brain is doing backflips, right? Of like, all right, you said it in English, translate it in Spanish. It doesn't translate apples to oranges, right? Se me olvidan las palabras. So sometimes I'm like, all right, hold up. Now we got to play charades because I forgot the word. Yeah. Like, right? And that's going to happen. Yeah. But, right, we're going to roll with it. Because guess what? If I'm having that experience up on a stage with a mic, so are your employees. So rather than shame them for that, how about we learn about how the multilingual brain is dynamic? And how about we foster that? Right? But companies don't think like that. Anyway, that's a whole different topic. But
give it to me.
Oh, the tea. But it became one of those things that I'm like, I can do this. And it just, the feedback that I got so many times, the most common feedback that I get with any engagement, it's always, Juliana, thank you so much. Juliana, muchas gracias. You're the first Latina therapist I've ever met. That to me, I'm like, and this is why I do what I do, because I, as much as I love hearing that, I don't want that to be the case.
Yeah.
That can't be the case anymore. Why? Because Latinos are the largest minority. Latinos make billions of dollars for the U.S. economy. So let's have more Latino, Latina, Latin identifying mental health therapists. We need it. The same way we need more Latinos in medicine. We need more lawyers, everything, teachers, you name it. But how can we get them through the door, right? And if institutions and all of these barriers continue to be in the way, we're going to lose out on talent. We're going to lose out on, right, the ability to connect with one another. So that really has been just my driving force of, I'm going to talk Spanish. I'm going to show up however I want to show up, and I'm going to embrace that. You're going to get the full real me. However I choose to present that day. Today here with you, it is no makeup, with my glasses, in a mental health t-shirt.
Oh, yes, we'd love to see it.
In my house. Tomorrow, it might be all dressed up, full makeup, contacts, looking great. But you know what? I can step into my power and say, I feel fantastic about who I am and what I come to deliver, and I deserve to be in the room no matter how I look that day. And we're going to roll with that.
And you know what? You maybe sent me some like spiritual message, because I came no makeup in, like, you can't see my fit right now, but I'm in like my little sports bra, and then I have like my shorts and then my big sweater on. So girl, I am just as comfy as you, and we are having the best conversation.
We are.
But I love that, show up, and no matter what I look that day, I can show up as me. Like, ooh, power. And you know, I'm gonna tell you, growing up with a very Latina mom and a lot of women in my family who were really big on skincare and looks, you learn, or I learned, this idea that I needed to look amazing anywhere I went. If it was a Zoom call, if it was work, if it was even going to the grocery store, I had to look 100%. And
oh my gosh, yes.
Reclaiming the, listen, I just came from a facial this morning. The skin is still popping a little bit. Like, just even being in my natural skin, no makeup, nothing on my face, except for some facial stuff. That is so powerful. It sounds so funny, but my mom was like, yeah, si vas a hacer el podcast. And I'm like, yeah, así. Because I was with her earlier, and she was like, I see what I said. I'm like, yep, I'm gonna go straight in there with this face.
Yeah,
because it's my face.
And that's so important. And I'm so happy that you touched on that, because that is a trend for Latinas. I firmly believe everywhere. For me, it was not so much the makeup. It was Juliana, póngase aretas. Put some earrings on. And I was like, but mom, why? Like, I don't want to wear earrings today. Like, esas cositas me pegaban aquí atrás, and it hurt. Those little, like, the studs, they hurt. I was like, I don't want to wear earrings. Like, no. And every time, Juliana, así vas a salir, póngase aretas. I'm like, ma, really? Oh, my God. Wait till I send her this. She's going to be like, you really talked about that. I'm going to be like, yes, mom. Because.
Girl.
We can dress however we want, and we can be bold and confident and embrace it. And that does not diminish your worth at all.
It's funny, because I still love that my mom is like that. Like, it's tough love, because I still show up and she sees me. She's like, ¿y esos pantalones? ¿O esas horas nuevas? Ay, pero ¿por qué no te compras esto, el otro? And then she's always about, like, how do you look, how you present yourself. But I do love that she instilled that in me, and I love that I've learned and unlearned. Like, I've learned so much from her, and I've also unlearned that I could do things differently too. And it's a little bit of both. And yes. I know Colombian women, like Honduran women, are the same in terms of just looking put together everywhere. But I know that sometimes as a woman, it can be hard, because you have so many rules, right? So many rules on what to do, what not to do. I joked the other day about my mom, my whole life saying, don't get pregnant, don't have a man. And now she's like, okay, well, it's time for you to get pregnant. It's time for you to get a man. I'm like, make up your minds. Make up
Which
your mind.
Which one is it? Pick a side. Pick a side. You can't
Right. And I'm curious for you, how do you balance? And we're going to get more into your work right now, but I want to ask you, as just like a woman in the mental health practice and just being first-gen Colombiana, how have you kind of balanced this, like, cultural expectations, societal expectations on both sides, American and Colombian? How do you find something that Juliana wants? How do you find her rule list or checklist or whatever you want to call it? How do you define what it means for you to be a woman?
Oof. And that, to me, honestly, every day it's something different, but I think it's honoring how I feel and how I want to take on that day.
Yeah.
And it's fluid. So for me, right, some days I am just in my Under Armour sweatpants that I think are actually men's, honestly, an oversized t-shirt, a hoodie, and Uggs. And then literally it could be hours later, I am full glam, and I'm known, like, when I am in my zone and I want to look professional and elegant, I wear a blazer. I'm a suit girl. Mm. Do not, you will never see me in a dress ever, but I'm going to show out in the best blazer you can imagine. And like, that is me. Like, I love to present professionally, but I'm also not that girly girl that you're going to see me in a dress. And for a long time as a speaker, I thought, well, how am I going to get on a stage and not wear a dress? But I'm like, who the heck cares what I wear? I'm going to go on and I'm going to give the same talk, whether I'm in a dress, in a suit, in leggings, doesn't even matter. Mm-hmm. And to just own that. So every day it really is, all right, today I feel like dressing like this. I want to dress like that and I'm going to go for it. And al que no le guste, you can look the other way.
Yeah.
And that is what I have learned to embrace, especially when I go to Colombia. Going to the mall, at least in Colombia, like this is a fashion show. Like you were meant to wear your Sunday best to go to the mall. And that is not me. Like, I'm going to be just like t-shirts, sweatpants, sneakers, baseball cap. And it happens so often that when I'm back home in Colombia and I'm just in the mall with my family, with whoever, I like see people like do like that double take of like, whoa, yes, ¿qué le pasó? Yes, ¿qué le pasa? Like, what is wrong with this girl? And I'm like,
yeah,
I'm comfortable. I'm good. I'm going to just embrace it. And I think that once you let go of other people's expectations and you just worry about yourself, it's freeing. It's liberating.
Oh, my goodness. And for you being, again, a licensed mental health therapist and entrepreneur as well, what are some of the – I'm just so curious. Like, what are some of the things that have become clear to you or have surprised you throughout your work, especially working with intersectionality with the Latino community?
Honestly, I would say for anyone listening to, it has really been that in the U.S., right, I'm a licensed mental health therapist. That role, that title doesn't exist for the most part in Latin American countries. Oh. So when I go to Colombia, right, and I use the word terapista or terapeuta, which would be the literal translation of therapist, they're looking at me like, what?
It's okay.
Like, what? So it's interesting because in Colombia, I have to identify as psicóloga, which would actually be psychologist in the U.S., and it's hard because my mom will use that, right? She'll say, she'll translate it from Spanish to English. So she'll tell people, my daughter's a psychologist. I'm like, no, 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 but I'm not, mom.
Yeah.
But in her world and in which she grew up, psicóloga is completely appropriate. So it became a lot of even one of the most groundbreaking things that I think I can share in terms of education in that intersect is the difference between therapist, psychologist, and psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And explaining that for families, for children, for anyone that lives in the bicultural dynamic, because it's so hard to understand where here in the U.S. to see a psychologist, it could be a higher level of care, where in South American countries, it's just, right, like you can go see the psychologist, right? But they don't have anyone kind of as that therapist role. So it really even just breaking up what those three mental health professionals are, the distinct work that they do, and then the other greater piece, right, like how you afford it, how you make appointments, how you navigate the insurance world of putting that all together and just getting you access.
Yeah.
That is really, it's been the best thing I think I can teach a lot of folks that, yes, there is a difference. Let me help you and let me help you at least learn a little bit about it, get more information, maybe not even for yourself, but this could be the resource that you know that your sibling needs, or you know that your neighbor needs. So that really has been part of the dynamic work that I've been doing. And I love it. I love it because it can seem so simple, but it can really make such a big difference and impact for folks.
Oh, absolutely. Do you think that's why there's like a little bit of a taboo as well? Because psicologa reminds me of someone that maybe needs a little bit more care, or has like really experienced trauma, versus the day-to-day, like, I just need someone to talk to. Like, do you think that's why there's that taboo in the Latin community? Because they have one definition and they're like, oh, se para locos, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I really think that that is a big part of why there continues to be that stigma. Mm. There's not really many other layers to it, right? In terms of, there's all these different, right? In the U.S., there's all these different types of therapy and modalities. Mm. And not that there isn't in South American countries, but the difference is the role of the therapist just doesn't exist at all. So when you're cutting that, you're cutting out just... Who do you go if you just want a different perspective, right? Yeah. In the U.S., it wouldn't be a psychologist, right? So it's so much of learning to unlearn, to relearn because of the U.S. system and the healthcare model.
Yeah.
So it's so tricky, and it's so much to do with, you know, billing, insurance, and this and that. But really helping folks, because if we really think about it, if nobody knows this information, how are they going to get the help that they need? Yeah. It's not even going to happen if they don't know about it. So starting at that groundwork level, it really is setting that foundation for, okay, now I know, gracias a Juliana, ya sé que no es un psicólogo, I want to go see a therapist, or this person needs a therapist. And they connected me with LatinxTherapy.com, and I can put in the zip code and I can find a bilingual therapist right in my community. Bam.
Yeah.
Like all of that. That has literally been the just incredible work that I'm blessed and I'm honored to do every day, that I can just help connect people to the resources that they deserve first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And that I firmly believe we as mental health professionals can definitely do more, because we continue to be that underserved community. And I do not want the words underserved and Latinos to continue to go hand in hand.
Oh, period. Have you experienced resistance from the Latino community when you talk about mental health, therapy, access, all of those things? Have you encountered resistance, or have you been surprised of how open people are to it?
It's been interesting, for sure. Not necessarily resistance. It's been a lot of, well, why should I give it a try if, you know, I know it didn't work for that person? Or why should I try therapy? Or why should I talk about my problems when I can just go to my priest, right? Or, you know, why should I take time out of my busy day, or not even take time? How do I get to take the time off of work and my schedule working two jobs to go to a therapist that is three towns away? I have to get on two buses like all of that, like thinking of access as a whole. And when it comes to that, right, when we think of the access part, right? Like, I have to say, like, you're absolutely right. It is hard. You have to be at some point of privilege to have mental health care access.
Yeah.
That I recognize. However, when it becomes that conversation from Latinos of, well, I can just go to my priest, I don't have trauma, I'm fine. It's like, okay, well, we're all at stages and nobody's going to make you change. Nobody can make you change, and you have to want to change, improve, succeed for yourself, not for anybody else. And I will respectfully let them know, listen, if therapy is not for you right now, that is okay. I hope that at some point in your life, if you do need it, you know that you can reach out to me, right? You can find me, you can connect with whoever to have this conversation. But right, at least letting them know, like, hey, I'm Latina. I was born in another country, and there is absolutely no shame in saying, right, you need mental health support, right? Or yeah. What really becomes the question is, if I go see a therapist, will they put me on antidepressants? That misconception, right? Because psicólogo in South American countries are the doctors that prescribe medication. Where in the U.S., right, I don't prescribe medication at all. That is not my thing. It is fully talk therapy. So again, it's so much of defining what therapy is or isn't and getting that clear understanding. So even letting them know, like, you know, I'm not going to give you medicine. You can just come in and talk, right? Like, bring your café, bring your pancito, traiga mi almohábana, right? Like, this is going to be fine. It's confidential, right? Like, even talking about confidentiality, right? Mm. Where Latinos live in this culture of chisme, that is also such a hard thing to navigate, where it's like, you know, what we talk about in the space is safe. Yes, there are exceptions, of course, very clearly defined exceptions, but your neighbor can call me, your son, your daughter, whoever can call me. I cannot confirm or deny that they're a client.
Yeah.
I can't even let you know that they are in this office. That's how much, right? There's protection for you.
That needs to be your tagline. Like, el chisme sin the whole telephone. Like, because that's really what it is. Like, es como tu hablando con tu comadre, tu amiga, tu like tu socia, whatever you want to call it. Like, es una charla. Like, let's have a conversation. And that's the one thing that changed the game for me with therapy, because I remember my therapist calling me out, and she's like, you know, you don't have to be perfect in this space. This is for me and you. And I realized, I'm like, I pay this woman, and I'm over here trying to sugarcoat so much, because that's what we're taught, is to, no, everything's good. I'm good. I did the work. Fine. Solid. We good over here. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Moving on. She was the first person who called me out. Like, you know, you're not as vulnerable as you think you are. She said it with so much love and grace. The way I'm saying it now, it doesn't feel like that. But I think that's what needs to be the tagline for Latinos, is this is the chisme without it going anywhere else. Like, you can give me all the tea here. And no, la fulana esa no se va a enterar. Like, you're good. Yeah. That needs to be. Okay, Juliana, if you don't make that your tagline. El chisme no sale de acá. El chisme no sale de acá, okay? Se queda aquí.
But yes, right? Like, that would be, right? That would be transformative, right? Imagine if all of us did a campaign. All Latino identifying therapists did a campaign on how therapy can be, right, this chisme community where it's safe. Oh my gosh.
Everybody. Are you kidding me? My mom would be first to sign up. I'll sign her up for me. Like, oh my gosh. But it's real. And I think it's powerful work that you're doing, Juliana, and I want to give you your flowers, because to destigmatize mental health in a community where I think people pride themselves on being really strong, resilient, and having this uncomfortable conversations around like being soft, right? Because we want to be strong. We want to be the ones that, no, a mí no me pasa nada. Si tengo algo, voy a orar. Me voy a orar así en la esquina y estoy bien. But I think there's power in, again, normalizing this. And even just the conversation we're having right now, like, el chisme sin el fulano, you know what I mean? Like, just being able to translate it into language that makes sense for us and our people. Yes. It's so powerful. And only you, only Latinos, only people who are part of this community can really do that. And so I want to give you your flowers for doing that work, because I think our community needs a lot of healing, and we don't even know it.
We don't know it. Pero hopefully, right, your platform and right, communities like this, and right, this is how it starts, that we start to learn and it becomes a conversation. So honestly, thank you for letting me share, right, and ramble on about mental health.
Girl, you were so not rambling. No, we need more of these conversations. And I'm curious because I know through therapy we talk a lot about learning, unlearning. I think there's a lot of talk around unlearning and, you know, unlearn this, all this generational trauma, but we forget that there's so much generational wealth that we have as well. And there's so much goodness that we can take with us. Juliana, what is like some of the things that you've learned and unlearned throughout your time, just being first gen, being in the space as a therapist, just doing the work you do as an entrepreneur? What are you unlearning and what are you learning?
What am I unlearning and what am I learning? Wow, that is a bold one. I am unlearning about what the version of the American dream I thought I would be living was. It is not the 9-to-5 by choice. By choice, yeah. It is not the 9-to-5. It is not being confined to an office space. It is not working in an office 5 days a week. Mm. I do not care for, right, the 2-week paid vacation. Like, I don't care for any of that. I'm learning to create the version of the life that I want to live in and the life that I want to create. And, right, that may or may not be, right, with a fancy employer, with the fancy title, sitting at a desk, which is interesting because, yeah, right, like growing up, it was a lot of like you go to school to get the fancy job and that's the job you work in for 40, 50 years and then you die. Hopefully you have some type of retirement.
Si Dios quiere. If you're lucky.
Si Dios quiere, right, then you retire at 65 and then at some point you'll just, yeah, like die. Like, no. I want to have, right, I want to make a legacy. I want to make history. I want to make impact. And that is not going to be behind a desk working for a big company. It's going to be working for myself and doing the work at the ground level where I know I'm making direct impact. And I can see that change being made. And I want to continue to learn how to do that on a greater scale and at a greater capacity. Where no matter where my business takes me, I can still be connected at the ground level. I never want to, right, get so in my head that I never see the real work. I always want to stay grounded in community and in my values and in supporting and having Latinos grow. And I want to be there to witness it. So yeah, I'm learning to make my own way and define what the American dream looks like for me.
I love that. And I guess that's, you're answering both. You're unlearning what it's supposed to be and you're learning this new version of it and you're creating your own path. Oh girl, that's so beautiful. So beautiful. I could talk to you forever about mental health. And I think, again, this is important for people to know about. How can people connect with you? How can they find more of your content? How can they hire you? All the things. Where do they find more?
Absolutely. So I am on LinkedIn. That's one of my biggest platforms. So anyone that wants to connect with me on LinkedIn, Juliana Londoño, all of my links to everything are there. I am on Instagram as well. And my website, I am launching my rebrand hopefully soon. So my website will be up and running and looking fantabulous shortly. But my website is, and it will be the same one, www.juliana-londono.com. Again, you can Google me. I am there. I make sure I come up when you Google me. Oh, yes.
I know that's so right.
Yes. So find me. Let's connect. Let's have a chat. If anyone wants to learn more or learn more about resources in your community, you don't know where to get started, please, please, please reach out.
And you can have the chismet otra vez sin el fulano que se enterar. Like you can have all the tea and it doesn't come out of those doors. So shout out to you. I want to close this conversation with a brindis as always. I know brindis, you're not supposed to do it with water, but you know, we're rebranding over here. But I want to give you the space, Juliana. What do you want to cheers to, and what do you want to manifest for our Latino community?
Yes, I want to manifest the learning and the growing and of how mental health can be a tool to empower us as a community, as Latinos, to succeed in so many levels and in so many ways, and that with good mental health, we can transform our lives and the future generations to come. Salud to everybody.
Salud, 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 salud. Thank y'all so much for tuning in. If you feel so called to, please leave a review or hit me in the DMs. Let me know how you're loving this content. I'm going to see y'all next week for more Cafecito and Chisme. For all Hello Latino updates, follow Hello Latino Podcast on Instagram, or you can find me on LinkedIn. My website, odalisjasmine.com, has a lot more information. Y bueno, con mucho amor, amiga hondureña. Abrazos.